Jake behind me. I felt him like a few degrees of temperature change, a prickling. He said into my shoulder, "That's what we said about you." "This is the glory month, hmm?" Simone said, transfixed over a crate of chanterelles. They were sheathed in dirt, her fingers streaked with it. Yes, those were luminous September days. The afternoon light purling, the mood alert, turned on, compassionate. Out in the green market, people circled patiently, holding cartons of prune plums, ears of the last silken corn, thin-skinned lavender eggplants. The air vibrated like the plucked string of a violin. "I knew from those rains last week. I just knew it. Look at these." She passed one to me, and I inhaled. She wiped the tip of my nose, and I drew closer to her. Simone, unheeded, unrigid, as if we had no work to do. The crease of concentration between her brows ironed out. Her attention felt like a warmer current of water. "I've put together a stack of books for you, including that wine atlas you're always peeking at in the office. You can have an old copy of mine. You should have one at home. I've been meaning to bring them, but perhaps you can come by my apartment, since it seems you're in the East Village on your days off." I cringed again at being caught with Will on the outside. "I'm happy to come. Whenever." "And it's time for you to open a bottle of wine." "Not for a table." I saw myself being pushed overboard. Simone with a knife at my back. The sea black. Turbulent. Bottomless. "God, no, not for a table. We can practice tonight after close." There was a low white fridge that they called the cheese larder. Next to it sat the day's cheeses. Orange spotted rinds, ashy cones, teal vein cheeses all breathing under a mesh dome. She took a wood-handled spade and dug into them. I looked around to see if we would be caught, but the kitchen was miraculously empty. She went around a corner and came back with a cluster of grapes. Their musk was a solo performance. All the other scents dimmed. "Spit the seeds." She spit two black seeds into her hand. I had already bitten them, bitter and tannic. Mine didn't have any. "One of the three fruits native to North America, that distinctive Concord musk. The great irony of our country is that we produce the greatest table grapes in the world, and yet can't seem to figure out how to make wine. Arturo?" A dishwasher was going by, carrying a bus tub of muddlers, cocktail shakers, strainers. "Arturo, do you mind asking Jake to make an Assam? He knows how I like it." "Thank you." Arturo smiled and winked at her. This was the same man that growled at me when I asked him where to put the recycling. I hadn't seen Jake come in. Did he just appear when Simone needed her teammate? His effect must have shown on my face. "Did you want one?" I shook my head, though I very much wanted Jake to make me tea the way I liked it. "Ah, well. Do you know what abundance is?" I shook my head again and plucked another grape. "You have been taught to live like a prisoner. Don't take, don't touch, don't trust. You were taught that the things of the world are flawed reflections, that they don't demand the same attention as the world of the spirit. It's shocking, isn't it? And yet, the world is abundant. If you invest in it, it will give back to you tenfold." "Invest what?" She spread some cheese on a cracker and nodded while she chewed. "Your attention, of course." okay. I looked closely at the cheese, the grapes. The grapes had a veil of dust on them. The cheese, a veil of mold. Reminders of the elements that shaped them. The kitchen door swung open. Jake had not only made it, he brought it himself. One Assam, he said. He had brewed it in a tall water glass and lightened it with milk. Thank you, darling. He surveyed the food Simone had laid out and smirked. He took a grape. Is school in session? He asked, looking between us. We're just having a chat, she said smoothly. A chat over camembert. He spit the seeds onto the floor next to my feet. I wouldn't trust it, new girl. My love, aren't you needed? I think I ought to stay put to protect this one. She's already got quite an appetite for oysters. 10 more minutes with you and she'll be reciting Proust and demanding caviar for family meal. My heart stopped. I thought those oysters were ours. But Simone betrayed nothing. She wore the same satisfied face she had when she accepted compliments from guests at the end of the meal. He was fearless with her. I couldn't imagine anyone else in the restaurant teasing her to her face. I don't need protection, I said suddenly, stupidly. They turned on me, and I shrank. The same thin-lipped, austere smiles. But through Simone's eyes, as she appraised him as having the potential to be related to her, I saw a streak of adoration pass and land on him. It was so unmistakable, it was almost hued. Sometimes I feel like you guys are related or something. Once upon a time, he said. Our families were close, she explained. She was the girl next door. Oh, Jesus, Jake. Now she's my warden. I'm quite benevolent. And omniscient, omnipotent, yes, it's quite a burden. And now I've got a classic case of Stockholm Syndrome. Their laughter was closed, held back from me. Laughter that ran along a private line. He left abruptly, and Simone looked at me. Where were we? You're the girl next door? Any lingering lightheartedness faded. That was reserved for him. We were from the Cape. We grew up together in a way. Okay, I said. Do you like his girlfriend? Jake's girlfriend, she smiled. Yeah, that Vanessa or something. I do not know a Vanessa or something. Jake's a private man. Perhaps you should ask him. I reddened and put my hands in my apron, mortified. I just thought it must matter, if you thought she was cool or whatever, 'cause you guys are close. Have you thought about what you want from your life? I don't know. I mean, honestly. Do you hear yourself? What? Cool or whatever. I don't know. I mean, honestly. Is that any way to speak? God, I was melting. I know, it's a problem when I'm nervous. It's an epidemic with women your age. A gross disparity between the way that they speak and the quality of thoughts that they're having about the world. They are taught to express themselves in slang, in cliches, sarcasm, all of which is weak language. The superficiality of the language colors the experiences, rendering them disposable instead of assimilated. And then to top it all, you call yourselves girls. I don't know what to say now. I'm not attacking you, just calling your attention to it. Isn't that what we are discussing? Paying attention? Yes. Did I scare you? Yes. She laughed and ate a grape. You, she said. She grabbed my wrist and pressed two fingers onto me, as if taking my pulse, and I stopped breathing. I know you. I remember you from my youth. You contain multitudes. There is a crush of experience coursing by you, and you want to take every experience on the pulse. I didn't say anything. That was, in fact, a very eloquent expression of what I wanted. I'm giving you permission to take yourself seriously, to take the stuff of this world seriously, and to start having. That's abundance. I waited for her to go on. Nobody had ever spoken to me like that in my life. She cut me a piece of the cheese and handed it to me. The Dorset, she said. And it tasted like butter, but dirtier. And maybe like the chanterelle she kept touching. She handed me a grape, and when I bit it, I found the seeds with my tongue and moved them to the side, spit them into my hand. I saw purple vines fattening in the sun. It's like the seasons, but in my mouth, I said. She humored me. She cracked whole walnuts with a pair of silver nutcrackers. The skins on the nuts felt like gossamer wrappings. She brushed the scattered shells onto the floor with the grape seeds, the pink cheese rinds. Let's be generous and say that I understood about 70% of what Simone said to me. What I didn't misunderstand was the attention that she gave me, or that by being close to her, I was always in proximity to him. There was an aura that came from being under her wing, with its exclusive wine tastings and cheese courses, the aura of promised meaning. When she touched my pulse, I felt so vulnerable, like she could stop it if she wanted to. I had an awareness that I would die. I hid from that thought, as I had trained myself to do. But it came back to me when I was walking home from the train late that night. The silent purples of the warehouses and oily black of the river seemed to be watching me. The streets seemed to be breathing. Then they seemed to be disappearing. I could see them being erased. I had that feeling of never having existed at all, which I could only call my sense of mortality. It inflamed me. More. That was the result. More got into my bloodstream and ran rampant. Hey, Fluffer, come get the list, Nikki said. Some nights that man came in here to play, his hair newly shorn, his ears sticking out, looking like an 8-year-old wanting to be chased. And some nights, he clocked in looking so tired he was gray. Never have kids, was all he said to me when I asked if he was feeling okay. But tonight, he had run around with an impish smirk on his face as if he had just gotten laid. What did you call me? Fluffer. That's your name. You look like a fluffer. My name is Fluffer. I stated it, confused. It fits. I took the list from him. Like a fluffer in a porno? The girl that sucks dick in between takes to keep the guys hard? There she is. He clapped his hands. See? You're not so new after all. So let's go, Fluff. I don't want to be stuck here all night. I put my head down. I was about to walk away, but I had a sensation I hadn't felt in weeks. I started laughing. Really laughing. It came up from my feet. You're saying I make you hard, Nick? He pulled his glasses down his nose and regarded me. Nah, you're not my type. But you kept me going all night, that's for sure. He winked at me. You did all right tonight. I ducked into the cellar with the milk crate. The sign above the door said, "Beware of sediment," and I started laughing again. It took me a long time to restock. I was still terribly inefficient. But I brought up bottles he hadn't put on my list, things I had seen him sell and knew he needed. I swept the room, too, still grinning. A lot of what I couldn't place about Simone was explained to me with the sentence, "She lived in Europe." I don't know how a phrase so vague explained why Simone could drink without getting drunk, why she had such an affected way of speaking, like a retired professor at her country estate, even in the midst of 13 emergencies, why she could wander into and out of conversations like a character in a Chekhov play who has been listening but hasn't actually heard a thing, why she was at once disheveled and precise, her lips blinkering red lights. She started at the restaurant when she was 22. She had left before, more than once. I heard rumors. She had been engaged to the heir of a champagne dynasty. They moved to France. She left him and wandered the uncharted bulk wine backwoods of the Languedoc and Roussillon, the lavender-soaked, filthy roads to Marseille, a slow boat to Corsica, back to the city, back to the restaurant. References to hard-baked afternoons in lemon groves in Spain, to time in Morocco, how she was engaged a second time to a regular at the restaurant. A publishing scion. But again, she had ended up staying, and he'd never returned. Hints of this from her, but mostly I heard it from others. The wreckage of powerful men added to her presence. I only knew that she was not of my world. She had barely a trace of the city, of the struggle, on her. Just the dust, which she shook off with a thoughtless dignity. The sky was so blue. It's only been 5 years. My skyline was never marked with an absence. Remember that wine school? Windows on the world? I had been underneath them, on the F train coming from Brooklyn, just 1 hour before. I was late for high school, but glued to the TV. I had taught a class there, on Rioja, on the night of September 10th. Chef made soup. So I heard something and looked out my window. You know, I'm on the east side. It was too low, but it was steady and went by almost in slow motion. The owner set up a soup kitchen on the sidewalk. No, I haven't been down there. The smoke, the dust. But the sky was so blue. My buddy was the somm at the restaurant. We came up at Tavern on the Green together. You guys never talk about it. I was going into a class called, I'm not joking, Meanings of Death. I always wondered, if I had been here, would I have stayed? And I thought, New York is so far away. My cousin was a firefighter, Second wave responder. Nothing on television is real. But am I safe? Because what else is there to do but make soup? But I really can't imagine it. I was pouring milk into my cereal. I looked down for 1 second. I was asleep. I didn't even feel the impact. A tide of people moving up the avenues on foot. Blackness. Sometimes it still feels too soon. It's our shared map of the city. Then the sirens for days. We never forget, really. A map we make by the absences. No one left the city. If you were here, you were temporarily cured of fear. It was well past 2 a.m. It was Park Bar, and I needed to stop drinking. The tables were dizzy. I said to them, "It's too early, spinning tables, calm down." Will took my elbow, and then we were in the bathroom. He sat on the toilet and pulled me onto his lap. I took 2 bumps using my wine key. I took them off the knife that cut the foil so cleanly for Simone. I had been practicing in the mirror. The bottle can't move. It can't wobble as you cut. Tear, insert, twist, push, spin, twist, pull. Don't hide the label. Cultivate stillness. Gentility when you remove the cork. Give the wine some grace, some space to breathe, Simone said. She can swirl wine in her glass without moving her hands, I said. What? Nothing. My eyelids dropped. Blackness. I felt him rubbing small circles on my back. "You're making me sleepy," I said. "That's good," he said. And I thought I felt his head touch my shoulder. Thought I felt him twisting me toward him. The drip flooded down my throat. Dirt, Splenda, sulfur. My eyes ventilated. I sat up and unlocked the door. The tables had resolved themselves. Park Bar had large windows, and on evenings when the temperature of the air complemented the temperature of your skin, they opened them and let the street mingle. Jake was outside smoking. He was presumably meeting Vanessa, who usually sat at a table with other servers from Gramercy. His t-shirt had once been white and was now nicotined, eroding, neckline torn. He only ever wore the same black jeans that gaped at the knees, the bottoms cuffed high over rough leather boots. The streetlight hit his collarbone. He turned and sat in one of the windows, Vanessa standing above him, her arms crossed, her face turned toward the park. His spine in his shirt, like some ancient draped artifact. I shook Will off me. He went out to smoke with Jake. I sat next to Ariel and Sasha. We only sat at the bar now that something was clearly going on between Ariel and Vivian. It was just Terry tonight, though, unfurling post-rush. "How are you holding up, babe?" Ariel asked. "Better. I'm probably just tired." I pretended to stretch my neck and looked at Jake. "Don't do it," Ariel said. I turned back to her, fixed my hair. "I'm not doing anything." "You're looking for trouble." "Look," I lowered my voice so Sasha wouldn't hear me. "He's very attractive, but whatever, right? Why is everyone so afraid of him?" "Because he's textbook, that's why." "Baby monster," Sasha said, hitting me hard on the shoulder. "You been for reals hungry? I tell you what the fucking problem in America. When I first got here, I eat M&M's for 3 days. That's all. I think I'm dying in some fucking hellhole in Queens, and rats eat my face. Now, I'm a fucking millionaire. But you don't forget hungry like that. I twisted a napkin and sealed my eyes to the black lacquer of the bar. I felt it. Jake's absence. I stretched my neck again and looked out the windows. Just the wind dusting up the bare street. I'd like to read it, I said to Ariel. She heard me. The textbook, I mean. Will came up, ordered drinks, and looked at me. You want one more, right? 2. Fuck brunch. Scott was bloated, red-eyed, but standing. The rest of his crew were walking bent in half. It's not technically brunch, I said. Chef always said brunch wasn't a meal, and I loved passing that on to the servers from coffee shop and Blue Water who had to stand outside on their patios serving Eggs Benedict. Fuck lunch. I knew you were in trouble, Scott. I told you it was time to go home. You wanted to stay. I had left Park Bar at 3:30 a.m., right when the cooks were getting another round of Jägermeister shots. I had taken one and thought I might throw up on the floor. Instead, I threw myself into a cab and threw up in my own toilet like an adult. I was proud of myself. I'd volunteered to cut the butter. The hot knife slipped into the chilled sticks effortlessly. The pats clung to the wax paper. It had the same orderly rhythm of folding napkins, repetition, and satisfying progression. My fingers were shiny. Fuck brunch forever, Scott moaned. Where's Ariel? She's dining room today. Sorry, you're stuck with me. Get Ariel. I need her treats. Treats? It's an emergency, he yelled. Okay, I'll find her. She was standing at the service bar having an espresso and talking to Jake. Hey, Ariel, I said, turning to the side so he wouldn't think I was trying to look at him. Scott needs you in the kitchen. We're in a war, she said. She was beaten up around the eyes, but fairly fresh for someone who'd only slept a few hours. Whatever, I said. I wish my hair was down so my neck and cheek weren't so vulnerable. Jake in the mornings, before service, pre-caffeine rush, bags under his eyes. Not interested, I told him with the angle of my head. He just said it was an emergency. She went into the kitchen like she was ready for a showdown, but Scott was abject. He leaned over a station with his head in his hands. What's up, baby chef? Usually, they would start fighting. He especially hated that name, but he moaned instead. I need help. Apologize for hitting on her. Ariel, I wasn't, I swear. That girl loves cock, I can't help it. Bye-bye, she said, and stuck up her middle finger, the nail painted black. She turned to leave, and he yelled, I'm sorry, I will never look at her again. I have a small dick, I'm insecure, I'm untalented, I'm stupid, I will cook you whatever you want for breakfast. She stopped. Steak salad, and dessert, and whatever new girl wants. Fine, hand them over. You're disgusting, but you're not untalented. I want to be fair about this. She clapped her hands. Okay, beverages first. Sundays had a candid feeling. There were no laws, no stakes. Howard and Chef were both off, as was most of the senior staff. Scott ran the kitchen, and Jake was the most senior on the floor. It was his only day shift, and it was clear he was in a fog for the entire service. It was also Simone's day off. The people who remained on this pared-down crew were usually mildly hungover at best, actively ill at worst. Ariel pulled down a stack of clean quart containers and headed into the wine cellar. Those quarts, which once housed minced garlic, shallot vinaigrette, aioli, tuna salad, shredded Gruyere, they came back as beverages. It's just Sancerre on ice, splash of soda and lemon. Stick a straw in it, and it looks like seltzer.
I need the treats, Ari. I could have had Skipper make beverages.
Skipper? She asked me. Barbie's little sister? I shook my head. I've given up. Each one is better than the last. She had a handful of blue pills. Two for you because you're huge, and we will split one because we are tiny. She broke a pill in half and handed it to me.
I haven't eaten, I said. Also, what is it?
Adderall. Fixes everything. Obviously.
Obviously.
I took my half and sucked on my straw. I felt dizzy as soon as I swallowed. It wasn't noon yet.
Delicious.
Scott gulped his down in two sucks and handed the quart back to her. He was sweating, breathing hard, and I had a vision of him collapsing during service, a bear keeling over.
Refill, refill.
You're going to have to teach Skip how to do this stuff. I have work to do, Ariel said, but took the quarts and headed back into the wine cellar.
What do you want?
Scott looked at me sideways.
What? What do you want to eat?
At my hesitation, he moved on to other tasks, and I saw the precious opportunity slipping away.
What's in the omelet? I have zero fucking idea. What do you want in the omelet?
Chanterelles, I said. Scott made a disapproving grunt, but didn't deny me. He reached into the lowboy and started cracking mottled brown eggs into a clear bowl. He turned up the heat under a small black skillet. The yolks were a vivid, livid orange. They're nuclear, I said, leaning in to watch. Last night's booze radiated off him, but Scott's tattooed hands took flight from muscle memory. He frothed the eggs with a fork in two swipes, touched his finger to the pan to feel the heat. He turned the flame down and slid the eggs in. He dipped his hand into the salt and flung it. He tipped the pan to all the points on a compass, letting the wet eggs slide under the set edges. The chanterelles had been prepped earlier. They were waiting, wet and caramelized. He spooned them into the middle. He rolled the eggs, using only the tine of a fork and the movement of the pan. It was all one motion. The skin of the omelet was flawless. Ariel came up with new beverages for us. Her eyes flashed when she saw my omelet, and we dug into it from opposite ends. I sipped my wine through a straw. I saw whole peaceful countries built on perfect omelets and white wine spritzers. Nations at war, drinking before noon, and then napping.
Is that Scott's chaser? I pointed to a fourth quart container.
No, it's Jake's. Will you drop it off? I shook my head. Come on, babe. Por favor. I'm super behind.
It's on your way, I whispered.
Take him the drink and stop being a cunt, she whispered back.
Ugh, I said. Too early for the C word.
I wiped my mouth with a bar mop and ran my tongue around my teeth for stray bits of parsley. As I picked up the drink, the first ticket came through, as grating as a lawnmower starting. Ariel said,
It's never too early for the C-word.
Scott said,
Fuck brunch.
I said, Cheers. My last sip of wine was still humming in my throat as I approached him. He was leaning against the back bar with his arms crossed, face toward the window. There was no one to serve yet.
I put the drink down. I tapped my fingers on the bar and decided to leave it at that, but then said, Jake. He turned gradually, surprised. He didn't move. This is for you, from Ariel. I turned to leave. Hey, I need bar mops. He took a sip. The key to dealing with Jake was that I told myself it was all in my head. He rarely engaged with me. The problem with that method of disavowal was the oysters. I thought maybe something had shifted, but I didn't trust it. But when he asked me for more bar mops, it was obvious. He was flirting. I already gave you the par for the bar, I said carefully. I need more. There aren't any more. So we're going into a busy Sunday lunch service with no bar mops on the bar? What is Howard going to say about that? He's going to ask why you wasted all your bar mops. Jake leaned forward on the service bar, close to me. He smelled sour and fragile, and said, Get me fucking bar mops. I rolled my eyes and walked away, but my stomach flipped. It kept flipping. How many times had Nikki said that to me, and I just nodded? My secret stash was in my locker. As far as I knew, I was the only one to have thought of this. Since the management kept them locked up, I figured I should as well. I finished my beverage before I dropped them off. He was annoyed by the 6 new guests in front of him, and I said to myself, Leave the bar mops, walk away. Instead, I said, Jake, the charge I got from demanding his attention, from making him look at me. Can you make me an awesome? I don't think I said it well before. His teeth were slightly crooked, and when we did last call, he would unbutton the top of his shirt, his throat pulsing like something that had been caged. His hair was irreverent after 8 hours of bartending. He drank like he was the only person who understood beer. When he looked at you, he was the only person who understood you, sipped you, and swallowed. Someone told me his eyes were blue, someone else that they were green, but they were gold in the center, which is entirely different. When he laughed, it was rare and explosive. If a song came on that affected him, let's say Miles Davis's Blue and Green, he would shut his eyes. His eyelids would flutter like he was dreaming. He was making the bar and guests disappear. He would disappear too. He could turn himself off like a switch, and I stood in the dark, waiting. It was in the autumn that what they called our people returned. In 30 years, Nikki had never forgotten a regular's drink. If they caught his eye when they walked in, the drink would be ready before they had pocketed the coat check ticket. Simone had never forgotten an anniversary or a birthday. She would be silent throughout the meal, only to appear at the end with complimentary desserts, happy anniversary to Peter and Catherine, or whatever, written in chocolate ganache. But she had a million tricks the other servers emulated. When a guest particularly enjoyed a bottle of wine, she made a pressing of the wine label, scraping it onto a clear sticker and putting it into an envelope. Sometimes she and Chef signed it. I couldn't figure out the exact cause-and-effect relationship, but her wine sales were leaps ahead of everyone else's. We had support. At every pre-shift, the hostess reminded us of who was coming, their table preference, their likes, dislikes, allergies, sometimes gave a summary of their last meal, especially if it had been questionable. But whatever computerized tracking system they used, and I'm sure it was top of the line,
It couldn't stand up to the senior servers and their memories. Their innate hospitality. Their anticipation of others' needs. That was when service went from an illusion to a true expression of compassion. People came back to the restaurant just to have that feeling of being taken care of. They had to be kept at a distance. That was key to the relationship. The intimacy was confusing because the line was so firmly drawn, no matter how many times the regulars wanted to believe that they were family. From Walter,
"Regulars are not friends. They are guests.
Bob Keating? A racist? And a bigot. I've waited on him for a decade, and he has no idea that he's being served by an old queen. Never show yourself."
From Ariel, "Never go out with regulars. Sometimes they ask about my shows, and it's so awkward. These people don't even like music. Or, oh God, once this woman wanted to get a nightcap, and Sasha recommended Park Bar as a joke. And she was actually there. Just not right."
From Will,
"The biggest mistake I made my first year was to accept opera tickets from Emma Francon. I thought, this is awesome. I put on my suit. I know she looks good for her age, but there is a 20-year gap there. I thought it was totally innocent. La Traviata, a handjob in the taxi, followed by two nights where she totally embarrassed herself at the bar. We never saw her again. Howard was not happy."
From Jake, "They're all better looking with a bar between you and them."
"I forget your hand doesn't naturally go that way," said Will, catching me.
He crossed his arms and watched. I was in the server hutch by the handicap bathroom, out of view, practicing my three-plate carry. Some of the back waiters could do four-plate carries. Three plates solidly fanned up one arm and one in the other. The plates were organized, so they could flick down the first plate to position one and use the now free arm to arrange the other plates from open arm swoops on the left side of each guest. The plates were always placed according to the way Chef designed the dish, like a painting hung properly on a wall. I put the second plate on my wrist, and it dipped.
"There are three prongs," Will said. "Your pointer and middle together, the soft part right here," and he touched the bottom of my palm where it went to my thumb. "And this, your steering wheel."
He pulled my pinky up vertically. It felt wrong. My pinky deflated. Maybe my hands aren't big enough.
"It's not optional. Chef is going to keep thrashing you until you can do it. It's like you're half a food runner right now. If the kitchen boys can do it, you can do it. It's not a Mexican secret."
"She's shrinking again," said Nikki.
Will nodded gravely, and we all stared at her. Even I noticed that Rebecca was acting strange. She was a hostess, and we barely had any overlap. But she was polite, deferential when she saw that I was aligned with Simone. Overnight, she developed the whiff of an unstable woman. Something like Plumeria body lotion from the drugstore. She scooped together compositions at family meal, then talked instead of ate. She hovered, hawkish, as we finished our food. Simone said, "There's a moment in every female's career when her wit blackens." I saw it with Rebecca. Instead of laughing, she began to say, "Ha," as if writing a message over a great distance. I woke up past noon to two emails from her. They were addressed to everyone, the entire staff, the owner, everyone at the corporate office. The first gave her notice. She had worked, gotten home, and written to tell us that it would be her last shift. No going away party necessary. Thanks. The second email went like this. "Hi, guys.
First of all, I can't tell you how lucky I feel to have worked with you all. I'm going home to California for a while, but I'm going to miss everyone so much. But second of all, Howard and I have been sleeping together for 4 months. He is the reason I quit. Thanks for understanding, and thanks for the memories. XO, Becky. My shock was total. I looked around my room for someone to reflect it back to me, but I was alone. I texted Will immediately. Howard's girls? What the fuck happened? A text back from Will.
I know, what a crazy bitch.
A text back from Ariel. Textbook insane anorexic. I hear she's checking into a hospital in CA. And that was the consensus. I felt that some gross, unignorable injustice had occurred. But I said her name to Simone, and she began talking about Pinot Noir. There was a lot of, can you fucking believe that? And then head shaking. I kept an eye on Howard all night. He worked the floor in a pink tie, weaving around like cursive. How's it going? I asked him while I made his macchiato. Weird night? Did you know that the word weird pertains to fate? It's old English, and relates to having the ability to bend or turn fate. But the first popularized usage was Shakespeare. Macbeth, I said. I remember now. The witches, right? Very quick. He smiled, threw back his espresso, and passed me the empty cup. I wasn't wrong about you. Sasha was a tough nut to crack. He loved watermelon-flavored Smirnoff, Jake, cocaine, and pop music. Those subjects provided just enough overlap between us for me to occasionally warrant his attention. He finally asked me to do a line with him one night at Park Bar, and I was thrilled to cement the friendship. I'd heard that his father had died back in Moscow a few weeks before, and that he couldn't go back because he didn't have a green card yet. He was married to a beautiful Asian girl with blue hair named Ginger, but he didn't know where she was living, and the paperwork had stalled. When we got into the bathroom, I offered my condolences. He narrowed his eyes like a threatened animal. We snorted coke, and I told him I wanted to visit Moscow, and he said, "Oh, you're just a real idiot. That's all." After that, he started offering me his cheek to be kissed when he arrived at the restaurant. His favorite thing to say to me was, "What do you think?" And then state something I had believed, as if it were utter madness. He caught me by the ice machine, rubbing the bags under my eyes with ice cubes. "You crying? Oh, my God, angel face. What do you think? You're supposed to be happy? Why you think that?" "I'm not crying. I'm just tired." "Yeah, no shit. That's life," he said, exasperated. He started scooping ice. He hurt my feelings all the time, but was open about my stupidity, so I loved him. But I'm tired all the time. "You want a disco nap, pumpkin?" I shook my head. He shrugged. "Don't worry, baby monster. You still innocent." "What does that mean?" "I don't know. What do you think it means? When the trial comes, you will be not guilty." "That's what you think innocent means?" "It's not purity, sweetheart, if that's what you're thinking." He blinked twice, like he knew everything about me. "I don't know that I'm innocent exactly, but..."
"But what? You wanna be the victim too? When you grow up, you gonna own all that mess. That's being an adult, pumpkin face. You got the booze, the sex, the drugs. You got your under-eye concealer. Maybe you're tired because you're lying to yourself all day. Or you just fucking Jake all night like a little slut."
He looked at me and waited, smiling, as if he expected me to answer. I started giggling. He slid toward me, conspiratorial.
"Oh yeah, like you such a good girl."
My eyes full of kinetic energy.
my skin sensitized to anticipating motion. Specks of dust taking off from bottles, shadows darting onto the floor, glasses listing over the edges of counters and caught just in time. I knew exactly when someone was going to appear from a blind corner. The owner called it the excellence reflex. The reflex was to see beyond my line of vision, to see around and behind myself. The breath between consciousness and action collapsed. No hesitations, no projections, no order. I became a verb. 3. What time is it? I leaned toward the touchscreen terminal where Simone was breaking down an order. Her hand shot out and covered my eyes. Never look. Once you look, it stops moving altogether. It's best to be surprised when it comes. It's only 7:20. You're a silly, rebellious thing, aren't you? Is it so difficult to accept the present tense? 7:20? I'm not going to make it. We will turn at 8 and be so busy you'll forget who you are. One of the many joys of this profession. No, Simone, really. I've already had 3 coffees and I'm sleeping behind my eyes. I can't do it. Do you think you're here as a favor to us? She reviewed her order and tapped her fingers. She sent it through, and I heard the phantom sounds of a ticket being printed. Mechanically, I started toward it, and she shook my shoulder. You are paid to be here. It's your job. Look alive. I pushed through the kitchen doors, my arms leaden. Pick up, said Scott. He squinted at the tickets. The funny thing about Scott expediting was that he couldn't see that well, had probably needed glasses for years. Picking up. When I approached, I said in a quieter voice, Oh, man, I'm not going to make it. You don't have a choice. Table 49, Calamari 1, Gruyere SOS 2, and I need a follow. I'll come back for it. 49 is quick. We're cutting into a new wheel of Parmesan later, if that makes you feel better. Oh, goody, I have something to live for. Okay, bitch, I just uninvited you. I'm sorry, I'm so tired. Sounds like a personal problem, he said as I took the plates away. I approached table 49. They were the hungry sort of guests who had spotted me from across the room and were beckoning me with their anxiety. I tried to smile. Calm down. I have your fucking food. You're not going to fucking starve to death. It is a restaurant, for fuck's sake. When we laid plates down, we were to say the full names of the dishes. I usually sang them to myself all the way to the table. As I swung in to the left, open-armed, I said, Seat 1, calamari. Seat 2, Gruyere, SOS, and a follow. Table 49, enjoy. I looked at them expectantly. I waited for the gratifying looks the guests gave when they knew they could eat. It's their version of applause. But the two guests looked at their plates confused, like I had spoken another language, which I realized with a bolt of shame up my middle that I had. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I laughed, and their faces eased up. That's not what I meant to say. The woman seated closest to me at position 1 nodded and patted me on the wrist. I'm new, I said. The man at position 4 looked at me and said, What about the food for seats 3 and 4? Yes, sir, absolutely. It should be coming right now. I ran up to Ariel at the barista station. Jesus, Ariel, help me, God. I need a treat and a coffee. I'm 5 deep. It's the end of the first turn. She moved erratically between tickets and cups, trying to line her drinks up, but then turning back to the tickets. I had tried to show her my way of organizing coffees for a rush, but nobody listened to me. Please, I'm sorry, whenever you can. Fluff, I need 2 QA on the fly. Okay, sure, yes, right now. I kept my eyes down as I ran through the kitchen and down the stairs to the cellar. Scott called out to my back,
Follow. I need a fucking follow. I can't. Ask Sasha, I yelled back. But I was already in the cellar. Insulated. Dim. Mold stitched into the corners. Quiet. I leaned against a wall. I felt tears and said, don't stop moving. The Hue was one of those no markings boxes that were impossible to find. I thought it was probably at the bottom of a stack of five, and I accepted it. I grabbed my wine key and used the knife to tear into boxes, shoving them to the ground when they weren't the right bottle. Dust flew. I'm just tired, I said to the room. I pulled two Hue and made a mental note to come back and clean up the brutal unpacking job. As I ducked out, Will walked past with a bucket of ice. You scared me, he said, slowing down. You need help with those? No, Will, it's just two bottles.
Jesus, sorry I asked.
No, I'm sorry. I'm really off tonight.
You're off every night,
he said, and hiked the bucket to his shoulder.
That's your thing.
That hurts my fucking feelings, I said, but he didn't turn.
Am I running the food tonight?
Scott yelled as I came up.
Did we not schedule a back waiter?
I'm sorry, I said, holding up the bottles in front of my face as a defense.
I did it.
I presented the bottles to Nikki.
You want a medal? I need Clea's on bot 4 and 5. I can get down there, and I'm getting nothing from Sasha tonight.
Have you seen him?
Bot 4.
Okay, yes, but Nick, I'm not great at clearing. I can't 3-plate yet. I can try. I mean, I can do it.
Yeah, no shit, Fluff. I'm not asking.
Your espresso, Skip, Ariel said. It has the sprinkles in it. She handed me a water glass as well so I could pour a splash in. It was a trick I learned from her. It cooled down the shot so you could take it quicker. I gagged. The grains of Adderall stuck to my tongue. Delicious. Adore you. Angel.
Can you get me the glass rack? I'm almost out of flutes. These fucking idiots.
Ariel, no, I'm super weeded. I have to bust.
You're fucking drinking espresso. I'm fucking weeded.
Okay, okay. I held my hands up. A man in a navy suit holding a glass of champagne knocked into me.
I'm sorry,
I said with my meekest smile.
Hey, he said. I know you.
He didn't. But I nodded and tried to move past him.
Isabel, you were at Miss Porter's with my Julia. Julia Adler, do you remember her? You're all grown up. I haven't seen you since you were a child.
I'm sorry, that's not me.
No, it's you. Of course it's you. Your parents were in Greenwich.
I shook my head. I don't know what Miss Porter's is. I don't know a Julia. My name is not Isabel. My parents aren't in Greenwich.
Are you sure?
He narrowed his eyes and pointed the flute at me. I didn't know how to defend myself, since I didn't know Isabel. Or exactly what I was being accused of. In my bones, I thought, the customer is always right.
And that's funny, isn't it?
I said, trying to appease him.
We all look like other people, you know?
I smiled. Big, with all my non-Isabel teeth, and pushed past him. It was crowded. The bar didn't have orchestrated turns the way the tables did. Stools were vacated and refilled immediately by people on their second drink, ready to order 10 minutes ago. There was no grace period. Already, the next round of guests was pressing into the backs of the current diners, hovering when desserts were dropped. Stalking people that had asked for the check. And this was the weekend. These weren't our poised regulars. Loud, anxious, steaming. I pushed myself into a group. A man and two women, all of them reeking of cigars. He said,
She's getting in tomorrow, so I'm on my best behavior tonight. The boss is back.
The women smirked and leaned their glasses in closer. Music ran too loudly through the speakers. I looked at Nick, who was looking at Ariel, mouthing for her to turn it down.
The music amplified the guests. They screamed above it, gesticulated harder, everyone suddenly grotesque.
"Are you all done?" I asked.